Thank you very much. If you listen to the budget this year, the Minister of Finance announced that this year we're going to implement an IPRS system. That's an integrated population registration system. What it means is that we're going to go forward with the registration of our citizens. These things all work in tandem. And that's why we also are looking at the other side of it. I gave instructions that streets be named. And I'm sure that if you go around today, you'll find that most of our street naming has been done. I didn't know the name of my street till, you know, the street naming was done and I saw, what is it called? Prestige Drive. I don't know who formulates those names. Some of them are very creative, you know, Konkonte Street and, you know. So I live on Prestige Drive, I think number 5 or something. It's important to know where our population resides. It's important to know who our citizens are, who are foreigners living with us and all that. And so the minister has announced that we'll go ahead with an IPRS system this year. At the same time, we also are starting a new system of births and deaths, using community health volunteers and assemblymen, and using a simple mobile platform so that anybody who has a birth or death in the community can use their mobile phone to register name of father. There'll be a format that they can put name of mother, you know, name of child, date born, time, everything will be put in there. And that information will go to the district births and deaths registry. It will be entered into the district births and deaths registry and at the same time be captured in the national births and deaths registry. So that in future when a child has grown and wants their birth certificate, they just go and they go into the data system and pull out the information and print the birth and deaths, the birth certificate for whoever it is. I think that the two go hand in hand, the birth registration system and the IPRS. And the Minister of Finance has announced that this year we will commence the two systems. And once he's announced that in the budget, then it means that resources will be made available. And the authority that is responsible for that, of course, is the National Identification Authority. Once we have the IPRS system, then we will start the process of linking together all the other databases. And that is why we're building what we call the National Data Center. It is near the parliament, very imposing building. It's getting all the servers and everything that is necessary to be able to store and back up all our national data. And so once we have the National Data Center, we will have a link to the IPRS system and all the other institutions that issue cards would be able to link their databases into the IPRS. So that SNET, NHIS, DVLA, and all of them, Ministry of Foreign Affairs that issue passports and all, will be able to link up with the data system so that these databases can talk to each other and be able to compare and notes so that we don't have different, you know, organizations capturing our data and then issuing us with cards. Eventually, my eventual vision is that one day we should have a multi-purpose card that has your health insurance particulars on it. It has your driver's license particulars on it. You know, it has your SNIT, you know, particulars on it, and every other information that you would need. And so we'll continue to work to do that. With the issue of corruption, yes, this has been said many times, and there's a certain, you know, cynicism, or what would I call it, where he says politicians come and go, but the civil servants will remain until retirement. And it's true, because politicians focus on each other and want to beat each other with the stick of corruption, then you don't really trace, you know, what is happening in the system. A lot of the negotiations and technical discussions on projects and things are done at a technical level. And often as minister, it will be brought to you to sign after the negotiations and technical discussions have taken place. So often you might find that it's not even the minister who negotiated the project or the program. And so eventually when it goes forward and something happens to it, because you are the leader and you take responsibility, then sometimes you have to do what is dignified by resigning, not because you are culpable, but because you take responsibility and that you should have ensured that that didn't happen. But like I said, sometimes the malfeasance is, a lot of the time the malfeasance is below the politician. And we all know what happens in places. You take your documents, like you were saying, and they say you have to put some weight on it. You don't put weight on it, it won't move. You know, and so these are things that we know happen every day. And we must have the political will to expose it and deal with it. And so one of the initiatives I'm going to announce in the State of the Nation address is citizens' complaint centers, where a citizen can walk in and make a complaint about somebody who's either, you know, taking a bribe from him or has abused his office in a certain way. And these citizens' complaint centers are going to be put at strategic places. We're going to employ national service people to sit there, and they will take your complaint, and we will take your phone number. The complaint will be investigated very quickly, and you will get a response, you know, to what the complaint has been. It's one of the new initiatives my presidential staffers are working on. Clement Apakis, the chief driver. Clement, make sure it happens. So these citizen complaint centers will give our population the opportunity to be able to report these things so that action can be taken about it. And I believe that that will be another step in bringing about good governance. With regards to prosecution or sanctioning other people, I think in the Attorney General's report, it indicated that we should look and see if any other people were culpable and they should be government can go ahead to sanction them. There were defects in the procurement procedure. If you read the Attorney General's report, there were defects in the procurement procedure. The project involved respraying the buses. A lot of people think that it's just those stickers on the glass that were put on. The buses came in a dark orange color. And the justification that was given was to differentiate them from the City Express buses that work outside the urban centers, because these were being brought as urban and city buses. And so it was decided to respray them. So the buses were actually resprayed in four colors. And so I think what the Attorney General did was to contact some car companies and ask them and say, if you got this contract to respray these buses and put the labeling, advertising labeling on the windows, how much will you charge? And so they gave her a figure. And based on that figure and extrapolation, she determined that there was an excess payment, and the company has been asked to refund the excess payment. I know that, I think yesterday, on Friday, the lawyers of the company met with the Attorney General to agree on a phased payment, a payment plan to refund what has been described as the excess. And so the Attorney General will go ahead and take that. With regards to Gitmo, when I talked about consultations, I talked about consultations on the security level. I was not saying that we went and spoke to every pastor and every imam to ask whether we should bring the Guantanamo detainees. But we did extensive consultations at the security level to ensure that there was no danger to our safety and security. And those consultations were external, they were internal, and that's what I was referring to. This is a matter of security. It's not an international treaty, and so it's not something that we were required to take to Parliament, and that is why it didn't go to Parliament. But I said, as Commander-in-Chief, I mean, I stand to lose the most if I jeopardize the security of this nation. And so we did a lot of work with our partners, and I believe that the collaboration that we're having with our international partners is positive. I cannot disclose everything, but we have got very good intelligence information. And the risk to you is even worse than these detainees, because you must be interested in what your children are doing. Your children are probably being radicalized. One day before, you see your son has set off to go and fight in Syria. And we've seen a few examples where young, promising people have left home. And even though we haven't confirmed it, their behavior falls into a certain pattern that shows that they probably have been radicalized. And we don't have the network to be able to trace where they are. And so America and countries like that, we have submitted the names and they are helping us to locate where these people are and be able to tell what they are involved in so that when they're coming back home, we can find out where have you been, what have you done. And so these are some of the things that we're working on. There's a story of a Ghanaian girl, a girl born to Ghanaian parents in Denmark. She just got off one day and off to Syria. Went and had a child in Syria or something, returned to Denmark, was going to Syria again, and then she was stopped. So the threat is goes beyond just two detainees who were arrested when they were 20 years old and who it's been certified were not involved in any operational activity and have been certified to be low risk, who want to restart their lives. And I hear GBC had the opportunity to interview them. And they said they were cheering for Ghana in 2010 when we beat America. And that their favorite, I was told that they said their favorite player is Asamoah or something like that. Of course, Asamoah played in UAE for a long time. So I'm sure that definitely he'll be their most admired player. Where is my Christian compassion with prisoners? I'm the first president in this country to go to the prison and visit the prisons. I went to the prison, I saw myself, the conditions in which these prisoners live. And on the basis of that, and I went with the Chief Justice and the Attorney General on that day, and some of the justices of the court. And on the basis of that, we have set up a court in the prison as I speak that is reviewing the case of remand prisoners. That is reviewing the case of remand prisoners and letting them go, you know, if the state is not ready to charge them. And so a lot of prisoners who have been on remand for so many years are being taken out of prison. That's my Christian compassion for prisoners. And I also said that we must build a new remand prison because just the remand cell contains convicted prisoners too. And so in this year, we are budgeting to build a new remand prison, a new remand cell block in Asawam prison so that we can move the remand prisoners in there and then decongest the other prisons. Indeed, each of us must pay a visit to the prisons. I mean, it's not a condition in which human beings should live. These prisons were built years ago, and they were not built as a friendly environment for any person who went in there. It was really meant to punish you. But even then, at the time, the prisoners were few, two or three to a room. Now you go to a room, prison, it's there for everybody. You don't know. You don't know what you do and end up there. And so there's always been an advice to leaders that, of course, in the coup period, that you should make sure that the prison is kept in a good state so that if you land there inadvertently, it won't be as bad as it should be. But after my visit to the prison, I went with the chairman of the prison council, Reverend Wengam, and he was launching that very good Ifiasi project to try and get the private sector to assist and see how we can improve conditions in the prisons. It was an eye-opener for me, and I have committed that I will do everything possible to make the condition in our prisons much better. The first thing is to build the new remand cell so that we can decongest the remand prison and not mix, you know, remand prisoners with convicted prisoners. After that, we'll look at other things that we can do. We must also look at the welfare of the prison officers. And so I've asked the Minister of Finance to look for some money so that we can provide them with logistics and vehicles and other things that they need to be able to do their work. We're doing an IMF program that requires us to be austere. And what I've always said about the national economy is it's like your family budget. If you have a family budget and every year your expenditure exceeds your income, then you need to do something about it. Otherwise, you get in debt and you end up in a sawam. So if you earn 5,000 Ghana cedis and every month you spend 7,000 or 8,000 Ghana cedis, that difference must come from somewhere. Otherwise, you will keep either going to borrow and it's unsustainable because you can't pay. So for ourselves as a nation, our deficits had gone up to almost 12%. It was 11 point something percent. And we came up with a homegrown program to be able to rein it in. But there was a lot of skepticism about whether we could implement the homegrown program ourselves. And I said, we can do it. But, you know, the investors and the international partners and everything, at this time, they had stopped all, you know, disbursement of international donor support, you know, and Bloomberg and Reuters and everybody, the Ghanaian economy is crashing, this is happening. And once you get that kind of bad press, it affects your credit rating. So Moody's will come downgrade us, Fitch will come downgrade us. All the red credit rating agencies were downgrading us. So, Eja, in your poor corner of Africa, you are not in Nigeria that is like an elephant that can resist IMF and say, oh, come on, go away. You know, for policy credibility, I said, look, let's go to the IMF and let's, you know, implement this financial program. And so we sent the homegrown program to the IMF, and the same things that we had said we would do is the same things they said we should do. I don't see any significant addition at all that was made to the homegrown. There was nothing. The only thing was to reduce central bank financing, you know, to zero by this year. Otherwise, the same conditions were what we did. And what we did was we front-loaded the tougher measures. And so those tougher measures we took last year. And so this year, there are some austerity measures that we're taking, but these are to do with zero central bank financing. It means that if we have liquidity problems, we cannot go and take money from the central bank. Because really, when you go take money from the central bank, it's like printing money and putting it in the economy. And what it does is it increases money supply and it makes it difficult for inflation to come down. And it puts pressure on the cedi. Because once there's excess liquidity in the system, then what people do is they use the cedi to hedge, the dollar to hedge against the cedi. And so if you have excess money, instead of putting it in the bank, you go and buy dollars and put it under your bed or put it in your dollar bank account in anticipation that if the cedi slides, at least your dollar will maintain its value. And so one of the things we had to do was to do financial tightening so that we take mop up excess liquidity in the system. And I believe that for now, we have done quite well in terms of money supply, bringing money supply to the right level. And so we're on track. We haven't yet come out with the new numbers for last year because the Ministry of Finance is still compiling, but we brought it from 11.3%. We came down to 9.3% the year before. And this year is looking good. We're asked to come to 7.3%, but it's likely that we might do better than 7.3%. At the appropriate time, the Ministry of Finance will announce the numbers. And then this year, we're supposed to bring it from 7.3% to 5.5% or thereabouts 5.4%. And so it's good for us, you know, because the deficit is it's deficit to GDP. So it's how much your income exceeds, how much your expenditure exceeds your income as a percentage of your GDP. And it can't be good that a country is running a huge deficit. And so we're doing everything possible to bring the deficit down. Because when the deficit comes down and the economy is breathing easier, then at the same time, it brings down inflation rate. And when inflation rate comes down, then interest rates also follow. But like he's saying, if you look at the international dynamics, this is going to be a difficult year, not only for Ghana, for most countries. Like you said, China's slowdown means that China is importing less raw material, and that is part of what is affecting the price of crude oil on the international market. Because at a time where there are excess inventories of crude oil, China is consuming less than it normally would have consumed. And then there's all this price war between shale producers and, you know, OPEC producers. And then now there's this conflict between Saudi Arabia and Iran. Iran is preparing to pump more oil onto the market. I mean, it's a very unpredictable situation. And so it affects all of us. It's not only Ghana. If you go to South Africa, you go to many other countries, the economic situation is quite unpredictable. And that is why we must rely on ourselves more. And that is the very reason that justifies even this economic levy, because it's income that we are raising from within ourselves. We're not bringing from outside. And so that's the reason why, with the uncertain economic decision, we must learn to rely on ourselves. And so if all of us sacrifice a little more to the energy levy to sustain our power utilities, we contribute a little more so that we can pay our road contractors to be able to keep people in employment, I think it's something that we should be willing to look at. And so with all these uncertainties, you know, in the world, oil prices are down. It's cocoa that is still sustaining us with a good price. And that is also because of climate change. Climate change is affecting the inventories of cocoa. And so nobody's sure, you know, how much cocoa will be available. And so there's a bit of speculation there. So cocoa price remains high. Our next major export is gold. And gold has been down for a long time. It's even gone below the 1,200 mark. It's about $1,060 per fine ounce now. And so it means that the things that have traditionally boosted the economy are not looking very certain. And so we must pull ourselves up by our bootstraps. And the good thing is revenue is doing better so that we can continue to provide the social services to the people. And that is what is being called overtaxing. But if you even look at it, for the status at which we are as a lower middle income country, our level of taxes, you know, to, is it taxes to GDP or taxes to revenue, should be at 22%. Currently, Ghana is at between 17 and 18%. So if you compare us to an economy like Kenya, Kenya is extracting more revenue in terms of taxes than we are, because we are 18, Kenya is 22. And if you compare us to the countries that should be in the same bracket as us, we are performing lower than they are doing. But like I said, there is room for improving the collection of taxes. And so we will be very careful that we're not imposing more new taxes. But what we're doing is we are improving efficiency so that more people are caught into the tax net and are able to contribute their quota for the progress of our country. Thank you.